Under the Gun. Duck season opened on a Monday in 1961, and daybreak found me alone, crouched in a blind at the end of a weedy bay clutching Dad's blunderbuss, just as they did in the calendars our hardware store handed out. In spite of the early hour, the sky was empty of living creatures. Silence rang in my ears, punctuated by the occasional gronk of the ravens as they flitted about in the spruce trees. Drizzle trickled down my nose. It occurred to me that should a flock come into view, the duck caller would improve my chances, but with no one around to show me how to use it, I settled for coffee instead. The welcome liquid warmed my insides, but also got my mind going, which I didn't want. Like an unwanted tune, a nasty question kept repeating itself in my head. What was I doing on this marshy shoreline on a soggy October day? But each time an answer took shape, I pushed it away, and for good reason. At 22, university-educated and a sophisticate in my own mind, it was ego-shattering to acknowledge that the motive had more to do with impressing friends and fitting in than satisfying any personal desire. Had I not progressed from those early days when approval of the alpha male in the schoolyard trumped pride? Was I up to killing just to win favor? I'd come back from university expecting to pick up where I'd left off, only to find that a gulf had formed between me and my friends. Over the summer, we'd barbecued, met for beer, and visited old haunts at the lake, but something was always missing. Now, with the coming of autumn and the arrival of the hunting season, a way to bridge the gap had presented itself. My friends, chums from childhood, must have seen it as well, because they'd been hounding me to join them in the annual ritual, the hunt. If the sport was important to them, then ipso facto it was to me too. It was an opportunity not to be squandered. One which called for preparation, if I was to show comfort in the bush, polish with the gun, and composure before the kill. As seasoned hunters, they'd sense right away if I was up to it or not. If I could win their confidence, they'd give me a task, and we'd hunt together as a team. If not, I'd be relegated to juvenile status, placed out front with the untrustworthy, in case I stumbled and fired accidentally, or worse, went American at the first sight of game and started shooting from the hip, too humiliating to contemplate. Brushing up on my hunting savvy and bagging a few critters on my own was certain to raise my stock and help me recapture lost ground with my chums. The first mallards to come in caught me cleaning rain off my glasses. In the excitement, they popped out of my fingers, leaving me blind. I dropped to my knees, groping frantically for them in the swamp grass around me. But by the time I retrieved the spectacles, the ducks were gone. Minutes later, a second flock fled into the bay. Legs spread-eagled for touchdowns, wings rocking like squadron leader Gibson's Lancasters in the Dam Busters. This time I was the model of chasseur compétence, rising to my feet and squeezing the trigger ever so gently. The results were catastrophic. For me. I staggered backwards, my ears rang, there was a sharp pain in my shoulder, nothing fell from the sky. The ducks poured on the afterburners and disappeared over the trees. I resumed my vigil. The coffee went cold. In the space of an hour, three more flocks made their appearance and exited unharmed. About 8:30, with swamp gas filling my nostrils and the cold cutting through me, I heard a fast boat coming down the lake. For some reason, it kept leaving the main channel to sweep the bays. Who'd be touring the back waterways at full throttle in the frigid drizzle was a mystery, until I heard the boom-boom of a shotgun. Abandoning my blind and ignoring my new boots as they sank into the black ooze, I grabbed my gun and raced along the shore for a better view. My breath was coming in deep gulps when I finally spied the boat gaining on a family of ducks trying to get off the water. I stopped dead in my tracks, mouth agape. They can't be doing what I think they're doing, I thought, but they were. As the boat caught up to the birds, the hunter in the bow opened fire, blasting the hapless creatures out of the air. I tried to put a positive spin on it, give the hunters the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they're desperate for food, I rationalized to myself. But when the last duck had fallen, the hunters kept going, leaving the cadavers behind for the pike and gulls. I could hear laughter coming over the roar of the motor as they headed into the bay above mine. The coffee churned in my stomach. I had no idea how I was going to put a stop to the carnage, but by the time they reached my bay, I had rowed out to the middle and was waving my shotgun over my head and screaming at the top of my lungs. I must have looked as menacing as Cochise cursing the bluecoats from an Arizona mesa, because the instant they saw me, they pulled their jackets up to cover their faces and tried to flee. But they were traveling too fast for a sudden 180-degree escape, and had to settle for a wide arc around my rowboat. Like a radar beacon locked onto its target, my eyes bore into them as I searched for clues to their identity. My boat rocked furiously in their wake. Still, I kept my footing, determined to avenge the slaughtered ducks and foment justice on those who killed to satisfy primordial urges. But the outboard was nondescript, the jackets they wore commonplace. Then, as they completed their circle and began to speed off, the man in the bow's curiosity must have got the best of him, because he lowered his jacket slightly for a better look. As the jacket came down, flying hair came up, followed by dark-rimmed glasses and a Bob Hope nose. I dropped to the seat beneath me, overwhelmed by an urge to vomit. The person in the boat was my best friend's older brother. I abandoned my blind for the trail back to our cottage in a state of utter confliction. Those spineless hunters would pay, best friend's brother or not, someone had to inform the game warden. But as the consequences scrolled through my head, I could see the minefield I'd be stepping into. My friend would be after me to drop the charges. "Let me take care of it," he'd say. "I'll give that SOB you-know-what. It'll never happen again." But was a slap on the wrist enough? On the other hand, here was one of the friends I'd been trying to win back. Charging his brother would only widen the gulf. Worse, I'd be driving a wedge between myself and the whole town. In a small community, when a person is trying to fit back in, you don't go reporting neighbors to the authorities. Then there was the family business. Dad would stick by me, but would customers drift away? And who was going to believe me anyway? There were two of them and only one of me, my word against theirs. A judge might throw the whole thing out of court. This was my torment as I plunged down the trail, head tipped to the ground, oblivious to any other presence, until an explosion of partridge wings sent my heart to my mouth, my shotgun to the air, and my knees to the earth. Gasping for breath, I looked around, praying no one had witnessed my timorous exhibition, mindful of the glee with which my chums would treat such delicious news, and the speed at which it would spread through town. Imagine, R.J. Martin, son of Charles and Winifred, hardware merchants and sellers of guns, disgracing himself in the woods. It wasn't until I'd scrambled to retrieve my weapon that I noticed the offending flock mocking me from a poplar branch a few feet away. Heart pounding, I raised the gun and fired. Two fluffy balls fell to the ground, flopping and spinning. I expected their siblings to take to the air, but they remained motionless, sitting tall, confident that nature's camouflage would protect them. Hands trembling, I reloaded, pushed the gun stock to my bruised shoulder, and fired again. Another bird tumbled. Three partridge. Did this not make me a stalker of game, a hunter? A flutter worked its way through my gut. Mesmerized, I shot again and again until the last of the partridge family was down. Then, whooping at the top of my lungs, I rushed to my quarry. But the prize was not as imagined. Before me lay a writhing mass of blood, feathers, and bone. Weariness invaded my limbs, rooting me to my tracks. Killing was a precise art, I saw, one I had yet to master. At my feet, two helpless birds refused to stop convulsing until I snapped out of my trance and crushed their skulls with the butt of the gun. A third had been left with one wing and leapt into the air at my approach, flapping pitifully as it careened off the trees. I screamed at it to die for both our sakes, watching helplessly as it completed a hopeless circle. Finally, clutching the gun like a baseball bat, I stepped into its path and swung. In an explosion of feathers, it arced into the air like a pop-up fly, then landed at my feet, staring up at me. For an interminable minute, we held eye contact, until a milky membrane scrolled over its eyes and it went limp. Collapsing against a tree, I slid to the ground, muttering aloud in a vain attempt to absolve my guilt by blaming the victims. "Serves you right for jumping up like that and scaring the hell out of me," I screamed at the dead fowl. "Stupid birds! Why didn't you just fly away while you had the chance? If I hadn't killed you, someone else would have." I stared at the moss, forest, and sky, half expecting a sudden mysterious wind to send a tree crashing in on top of me. But the forest was still. Mother Nature gave no signal that she was marshaling her forces to seek revenge. The only movement came from the excited flies as they flitted in a drunken orgy from one bloodied carcass to the next. At last, petrified that someone might happen down the trail, I arose and walked into the bush in search of a soft patch of muskeg. When I found what I was looking for, I dug a hole with a stick and returned for the birds. Carefully, one by one, I carried them to their last resting place. With the evidence buried, I sprinkled leaves over the newly turned earth to conceal the grave, then, clasping my hands, bowed my head. The prayer I offered was partly for the partridge, but mostly for myself. I vowed to show more respect for living creatures, including the partridge and their feathered cousins. And I made a promise. This would be my last hunting venture. As for the duck hunters, they would go free. My deflated psyche had already taken a crippling hit. To add hypocrisy would be unbearable.